Some characters and events in this episode of the North Avenue Lounge may be entirely fictional. Others may be real. We leave it to the listener to decide. All celebrity voices are impersonations of varying quality. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Because really, what are the odds?
Hi, welcome back to the North Avenue Lounge. My name is Chris Gray. It's the end of May. We're moving into summer. We can feel the heat on us. It's summertime. Kids are out of school. It's time to start thinking about a summer vacation. But maybe you can't go on vacation. Maybe you're having what they call a staycation. Now, I've always hated that term. It basically means that I don't have the cash to go on a real vacation. So you're just gonna call it something fancy, a staycation. All you're doing is staying at home. I mean, like a staycation, that just basically means you're not going to work. You're sitting on your couch, watching TV. Maybe you're sleeping in, but that's it. All you're not doing is getting up, putting on a tie or a skirt, getting in your car in traffic, and driving to an office and sitting in a cubicle. That's a staycation. Who came up with that? Basically, you now have some time between 8 and 5. You can maybe, binge watch some TV shows on Netflix and just not answer work emails. Because for a lot of us, that's really all work is answering emails and phone calls. A vacation, you're out on a beach, you know, sipping a drink, maybe off exploring a foreign land. I don't know. Maybe you're camping. That's what we did when I was a kid. We didn't have money for vacations, you know? So we would go camping. We didn't go into any exotic locales. We basically go out in the woods and pretend like we were homeless for a couple of days. Or we'd go visit relatives in other states like Texas. You know, that was our vacation. But a vacation, it should be somewhere away from your house. Don't do a staycation. Get out. Go someplace. Even if it's just for a drive. You know, when you sleep in your car on the side of the highway. Just get out of the house. If you had told me about a staycation when I was a kid, that would have sounded like you were putting me under house arrest. It's like, oh, I don't have to go to school or work. And I'm just gonna stay at home. I don't have the money to go anywhere. That's house arrest. I work from home. The last place I want to be is in my house when I want to have a little vacation or a little time off. Home is great when you've been away from it. You know, when you've been at work or you've been out on the road. You know, man, you can't wait till you get home. But if you're home all the time, you know, just not going to work, that's... Now you're stuck. I'd be climbing the walls if I took a staycation. You know, I work from home already. That's why I talk into a microphone, because I'm desperate for human contact, people. Oh, staycation. What, I just don't turn on my computer? I just don't log in? Every day is a staycation when you work from home. But I, you know what, forget that. I'm going on vacation. You know, by the time you guys are listening to this, I am on vacation. Yes, sir. I pre-recorded this. Oh, the magic of radio. This is not live. I am not live right now. You are listening to a recording. But yes, I am on vacation right now. You know, by the time you're hearing this, let's see. I've just wrapped up a nice little vacation in southern Spain. And now I'm on my way to Toronto for the Combustion Improv Festival, where I'm gonna be performing with my group Dark Side of the Room from Dad's Garage. So it's kind of a working vacation, but still, I consider it a vacation because I've never been to Toronto. So I'm going there, I'm going to do some shows, and I'm going to check the place out. I'm going to do whatever people in Toronto do during the summertime. Whatever that is, I'm going to indulge in it. Because that's what a vacation is. It's a change of scenery. It's a change of surroundings. I mean, it doesn't have to be expensive. You know, you just have to go someplace new, someplace where you can discover something. You know, as we get older, you know, nothing's new anymore. That's why time feels like it's flying by. You know, when you're a kid, everything is new. You're just constantly bombarded with new sensations, new experiences. That's why when you're a kid, summertime feels like, you know, it's over and you're back at school so quick. But when you're an adult, it just, you know, flies by. You know, next thing you know, oh, it's September 1st. Hey, the summer's over. It didn't change anything from, you know, fall, winter, spring. I still went to work, still did the same thing. There's nothing new. So go someplace new, just someplace you haven't been, and experience something. Sometimes you can do that right in your own town. I've done that many times here in Atlanta. There's so many parts of a city, you know, like people who live in town think they know everything about out in the suburbs, and people who live outside the perimeter think they know everything about, you know, inside the city. But the truth is, none of them know. All we know is our own little myopic view of our world around us. So there are so many opportunities to discover and find something new and get that childlike sense of wonder right here in your own town. I did that recently. I was in Little Five Points, and I always see this guy in front of seven stages, and he's always dancing. He has his headphones on, and I can't hear what music he's listening to, but he's dancing his butt off out there. I mean, he's really getting into it. You know, he's doing some moves. You know, he's like some real dancing, not like some dude is just bobbing his head to, you know, whatever he's listening to on Spotify. Then I discovered on Monday night, that dude is joined by all these other dancers. And it looks like a dance battle's going on right out in front of seven stages. Now, I've noticed this for months. I've walked by, you know, seeing it happen. But you know what? I decided to stop and ask him who he was and what kind of dancing he was doing. And you know what? He taught me something new, something that I could explore. You know what? We only spoke for 10 minutes, but it felt like longer because he drew me in and I was jolted out of my zombie state of my normal life of just walking past things that I'm not familiar with and not letting it into my life. His name is Ismael Ibn Connor. And he taught me all about crump dancing.
Said, my name is Ismael. Yeah. Ismael Ibn Connor. I'm an artistic associate here at Seven Stages Theater and have been since around 2000 when I first started acting. It's a, well, we call them sessions in crump. We call them sessions, and it's mostly crumpers getting together, meeting once a week here. For crump sessions, battles, things of that sort. My crump family is in Paris, and that's how I started crumping. I'm an actor, and I worked there a lot in Europe, but particularly in France. And so my crump family, the Tiger Cole Boys, they're all based in France. There's two of us here in the States, but all of them are in Paris. Family, I mean, literally is the group of people with whom you dance, you practice, you have sessions, you even battle them sometimes, all in an effort to become better crumpers. And crump, by the way, is an acronym which stands for Kingdom Radically Uplifted Mighty Praise. It's a best way I can describe it to people. It's a liturgical dance form, like a contemporary American liturgical dance form, pulling elements from, you know, from liturgical dance and from West African dance and from hip hop movement and making its own sort of code, its own vocabulary of movement. I was in an artistic residency at a artistic institute, a national artistic institute in France called Recollet. And And I was there for 4 months in residency, and I happened to be outside doing exactly what you saw me doing just now. I was outside practicing, we call it labbing. So I was outside labbing in the garden at Recollet, and one of the Parisian crumpers saw me and was like, hey, this is where all the French crumpers meet in Paris. It's a place called La Défense, just outside of Paris. And so I went with him. I didn't know it at the time, but he was in the fam that I'm a part of now, Tiger Cole Boys. He's Twin Tiger. And so he introduced me to Tiger, and Tiger saw me dance and put me on that family. And so since 2009, I've been seriously crumping since 2009. I was just at an event. I was in Europe up until last week. And while I was there in Paris, I competed at an event called the Ultimate Alliance, two-on-two battle event. And so it depends. Right now, what's going on in Paris as we speak is called the Illest. And the creators of Crump, among many of other luminaries of Crump, are there in Paris right now, competing and judging battles and things of that sort. And so the two people who are responsible for creating Crump, Tight Eyes and Big Mijo, are there now. LA is the mecca for Crump.
Really?
Yeah, that's where it started, and that's where you know, we recognize this is where the best dancers, the best crumpers are, as the two creators are there, are from there. But it's certainly spread across the world. So there's, in August, I'll be performing in South Korea, and it's very big there. So I'll be in Seoul, and I'll be with a very well-known crump fam called the Wu fam. And they're monsters. It destroys all the sort of stereotypes we have about what people call black dance, and how, you know, people around the world have exploded that sort of stereotype and that myth about dance. I don't know, in particular sorts of dance being for black people or something. But I also compete a lot because I've traveled so many places. And the places I travel to, I mean, the crump is in all these places. So, and there are events all over the world, Russia, you know, Poland, Ukraine, Japan, China, Australia, all over Africa, Israel. I mean, all across the states, but particularly LA, New York, across Florida, Atlanta, you know, Baltimore, DC, places like that. We are we're fortunate enough to have one of the, what we call an OG. We have one of the guys who was one of the founding generation of Crump. His name is Goliath. His Crump name is Goliath, but he'll be here. And he's one of the what we call the OGs. He's one of the big guys. He's one of the guys that's under the generation under the creators of Crump.
Yeah, that was Ismail Ibn Connor, artistic associate over at Seven Stages. You can find out more about the sessions in Crump Dancing over at Seven Stages, Monday nights at 8 o'clock.
In the year 521, Boethius introduces the Greek musical letter notation to the West. In the year 800, poems are sung to music at Charlemagne's court. In 1717, Handel's Water Music is first performed on the Thames. In 1783, Beethoven's first works are printed. In 1895, Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake is performed for the first time in St. Petersburg. In the mid-1970s, historians identify this period as the beginning of contemporary classical music. Today, you can experience classics firsthand from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. weekdays here at WREK Atlanta 91.1 FM.
Welcome back to the North Avenue Lounge. My name is Chris Gray. This episode is all about the summertime, vacations, finding something new, discovering something new and exciting about where you are or where you're going. Like I said before, I love to find new things about the city. You know, I live in town, so I really don't know much about the suburbs, but I think I know. To me, up in the suburbs, it's all what, strip malls, Applebee's, Chili's, you know, chain restaurants, things like that. And what do people up in the suburbs think about the city? What do you think it's like for us down here? They probably think it's, you know, like the Road Warrior or Mad Max. They think, you know, think it's like Escape from New York. Criminals just running all around and there's like a gun shootout every night. Crackheads on every corner. Basically, they think it looks like, you know, the movie New Jack City from the 1990s. That's what people think. That's what I imagine people in the suburbs think the inside of the city's like. But it's not like that. It's vibrant, it's artistic, and quite frankly, it's a lot of fun. And I'm not saying the suburbs aren't. I'm sure people find, you know, fun wherever they are. We all just have to look. We all just have to keep our hearts open for that new experience. You know, be open to new people, new ideas. Don't close yourself off. You never know. The dude standing right next to you, either at the MARTA station or maybe waiting in line at the Chipotle, could say something that'll really blow your hair back. You have no idea. Open yourself up. He might teach you something new. I was talking about this same concept. I was having a drink in the Euclid Avenue Yacht Club down in Little Five Points. You know, telling people this. I was excited. I had just, you know, talked to Ismael Ibn Connor, learned about crump dancing. You know, I might want to try a little crump dancing myself. I'm not a dancer. You know, but it's so beautiful to watch. And people, you know, the artists that are doing it are so into it. You know, I want to be into something like that. So I started to wonder, what else is happening in this city that I don't know about? You know, I want to find out. And just as I was talking about this is when I met Linnell Dotson. He was sitting in the Euclid Yacht Club and he overheard me talking and he came up and offered to give me a secret tour of Atlanta neighborhoods. And you know what? The price, he said he'd do it for $10 and if I bought him a couple of gin and tonics. And that was it. Normally, you know, stranger comes up to me, hey, I'm gonna take you on a tour, you know, give me $10 and a couple of drinks. I'd be like, nah, I don't feel like being murdered today. But you know what? I had a spirit of adventure in me, so I said yes. I was like a junkie. I wanted another hit of novelty and discovery. So I gave him $10. And after he slammed back his first gin and tonic, he led me out to his car. An old 1993 Lincoln Town car. And we went on the secret history tour of Atlanta.
Known that this part of the neighborhood, this is called, Little Five Points is called the San Francisco of Atlanta.
Okay.
It's imported here. The fences that you see in Little Five Points around the trees here,
yeah,
they were imported from San Francisco.
Really?
Yeah, San Francisco is the first sister city of Atlanta.
Okay.
It was almost a full-scale transfer of items from San Francisco. It involved this railing, these trees, and at a time, this was a place where all the streetcars were. Streetcars of Little Five Points. Some things have changed in Little Five Points. Some things have not changed. You still find the grimiest people here in Little Five Points. It's always been a place for those who collect in grime to collect together. It unites them and it brings this neighborhood together.
We turned onto Moreland Avenue, where I noticed the Zesto ice cream restaurant.
Ah, Zesto. Those of you who are not familiar with Atlanta may not be familiar with Zesto. Zesto is our answer to Dairy Queen. See, it was thought that Dairy Queen at the time was a Yankee sympathizer.
Really?
Yes, so Zesto was founded as a response to Yankee sympathizing Dairy Queen goods. It was founded by Confederate General Charles Esto.
Okay.
So it was kind of a play on his name, S. Zesto. That history is long forgotten, and perhaps for good, its Confederate roots. Much like Fanta used to be a Nazi soda, no one talks about that anymore. No one talks about Zesto being a Confederate front for frozen goods and burgers. Yes, Atlanta's got a long history of restaurants that hate.
Okay.
Going from Zesto in the 1800s to Chick-fil-A in the 21st century. Long, rich history.
Further down Moreland, I noticed a building with some old lion statues at the entrance.
Ah, yes. Well, the lions are original. The building is a replacement. The lions represent, they were the entryway to a palace that used to be built here. It was a French king who had lived in New Orleans and found that Atlanta was more to his liking and moved up here and built a small palace. That was many, many years ago, and as you know, as Atlanta has been burnt down multiple times, the palace was a victim of the second burning of Atlanta. Yes, the second burning of Atlanta was the revolt against the royalty.
Okay,
and all of the royals of Atlanta were expunged.
Really, kind of like a little mini French Revolution.
Exactly. It's notable that you refer to the French Revolution because it was rooted in that, and that's why that French palace was the first to go down. Quite a shame. The architecture was quite splendid. If you look into your history books, you'll see pictures of that time. Yes.
Gathered in an overgrown yard along Moreland Avenue, I noticed what appeared to be a group of homeless young people. But upon further inspection, it seemed that they were all dressed in the same style of pseudo-homeless clothes. They all had what seemed to be very expensive camping gear, and some of them even had puppies.
Well, it's true. You've noticed something important, because those children are the scions of some of the oldest families in Atlanta. You see, as I mentioned, most of Little Five Points is imported directly from San Francisco. And along with that came many of the people who lived in San Francisco. Those are the children of the people who were imported from San Francisco. They are some of the longest living families in the city of Atlanta. And they are sprung from some of the finest families in San Francisco. They are, of course, the black sheep of all those families, but here in Atlanta, they've made a home for themselves and developed quite a little society that slipped under the radar for so many of the burnings and revolutions that occurred in Atlanta. You see, by virtue of living their simple-appearing lifestyle, they were never the victims of any kind of class warfare. They blended in, you might say. Some of the most wealthy and well-connected people in Atlanta, the oldest families, family names that you would know, Rockefeller, Haight, Ashbury, all of those names are represented amongst those colonies of folks that you see perhaps walking back and forth with backpacks and dirt in Little Five Points.
We ventured into Inman Park, where I noticed all of the development of new condos and shops.
It's true that everything old is new again. As Inman Park has developed these new condos or P people warehouses here in Inman Park. It harkens back to an older time when Inman Park was known as a penal colony of Atlanta. This is where, yes, most of your Civil War prisoners were warehoused here in Inman Park. There was a huge Inman Park prison located below the water line to keep them keep folks that had violated the rules of the Confederate Army.
Really? They had an underwater prisoner of war prison?
Not underwater all the time, only when it rained.
Okay.
Then the prison would flood. But the roots of Inman Park are in keeping people warehoused, and much like they warehoused them in square, unappealing buildings during the Civil War, I've returned to that time again, and warehousing some of Atlanta's most well-to-do and equally square and unappealing buildings.
We entered a transitional area, which seemed to be between Inman Park and the old Fourth Ward.
It's the neighborhood where you get to pick what neighborhood you're in. Right now, because we're next to some of the finer amenities, your Crog Street Markets, your Beltline, we'd call this neighborhood Inman Park. But if we go just over the other side of the street, yes, you're right, we'd call it Old Fourth Ward, and here we go into Old Fourth Ward.
Oh, wow, look at the
you can change. You see that things become a little bit more decrepit. However, I will say that the spirit of Inman Park thrives in Old Fourth Ward now as boxes and boxes of people holders are being erected to make sure that the people here are safe. That's the future. Let's talk about the past of Old Fourth Ward. It is the oldest of the fourth of the wards. That's why they recall Old Fourth Ward. As the oldest ward, it's the most wise of the wards. Yes, the decisions there have been made to, for a long time, to not erect many of these people holders and mainly focus on the development of parking lots. There's a lot of parking lots in Old Fourth Ward. You'll find it's got the highest ratio of parking spaces to people in the city of Atlanta, save Buckhead. Yes. Oh, the Crog Street Tunnel. I would love to comment on the Crog Street Tunnel, as it's got a long history of graffiti. As many people know, it's the place to get your first modeling shots done, or if you're taking a picture for the cover of your rap album, it's another fine place. But in the past, it used to be a main artery on the Hobo railways.
Really? Okay.
And that history of graffiti began with hobo markings in the tunnel of Crog Street to say whether it was safe to come through the tunnel or not come through, making the transition from Cabbage Town to Old Fourth Ward.
Really? I had never heard this before. Hobo markings? In the Cabbage Town?
Yes, in the tunnel it's more of a functional art. You're just leaving inscriptions for people to find their way. On this side, on the Cabbage Town side, the dreams and hopes of the cabbage people are represented.
The cabbage people? That's the first time I've ever heard the residents of Cabbage Town referred to as such.
Years of yore, in the olden days, yes, they were referred to as the cabbage people. This was the most Polish neighborhood in the country in the 19th century. It had the highest density of Polish and Eastern European people, and in the most racist of terms was referred to as Cabbage Town, referring to the staple of the Eastern European diet. That's how it gets its name. A lot of people wonder why it's called Cabbage Town, and it's because of that. And verily, at the time, people at the time would say that it reeked of cabbage because of all the Poles and Czechs and Eastern European folk cooking their cabbage food. During that time, people were very limited in their dietary choices. You see, people weren't making a lot of radical decisions about what they ate, and cabbage was a staple from the old country that kept these folks connected to their culture. Unfortunately, Yeah, of course, in one of the great burnings of Atlanta, all of the poles were run out of town.
Wait, did he say one of the great burnings of Atlanta? And the poles were run out of town? That doesn't sound right to me.
It's one of the dark secrets of Atlanta that goes unspoken in the history books. But as I've promised to you, to give you the secret history of Atlanta, the Great Pole Purge of 1897 goes unspoken of, but it happened. And the neighborhood, once empty, was invaded by eccentrics and, frankly, people who were, at a later time, would have been committed to institutions.
We'll take a break for station ID, and when we come back, we will continue the secret history tour of Atlanta.
Hi, this is Marnie Stern, and you're listening to WREK Atlanta.
Welcome back to the North Avenue Lounge. I am your host, Chris Gray, and we will continue our secret history tour of Atlanta that I took with Lionel Dotson, a gin-soaked stranger that I met in Little Five Points. Wow, I'm really learning a lot on this secret tour of Atlanta. I can't wait to find out what he says about the Grant Park and Oakland Cemetery area as we turned onto Memorial Drive.
So the Memorial Drive is named as to the cemetery. It's the Memorial Drive to the Memorial Cemetery, Oakland Cemetery.
So the cemetery was here first?
Yes, the cemetery was here first, and then the road was developed so that you could get to the cemetery, Memorial. Yes. Some people refer to Oakland Cemetery as the most integrated place in Atlanta. Yes. It's one of the few places where you will find some blacks and whites gathered together. Even though technically they're segregated inside the cemetery, they're at least inside the same cemetery. I think is the ancient motto of Atlanta.
Okay, together in separation.
Together in separation. You know, it's been modified over time, but at the time that they developed the Oakland Cemetery, that was the creed of the city. So it's a wonderful place to walk through and get a sense of who's died.
Now we turn off of Memorial Drive into Grant Park.
It's named after, of course, Ulysses S. Grant, the general who burnt it all down.
Now I absolutely know that's not true. We all know General Sherman burned Atlanta to the ground during his great march to the sea, not Ulysses S. Grant.
This was the burning that Grant did, was this Grant. That's why he got the park named after him. Jealous of Sherman's notoriety, General Grant came down to Atlanta and did a little burning himself. Right, and so he burnt down this whole area, which was then later renamed after him, Grant Park. Yes, well, the phenomenal burning that Grant did, it was such a display that while Sherman did do more burning than Grant, the focused attention that Grant gave to this area really is what earned him the worthy title to this park, Grant Park. So its greenness and grandeur is a testament to the houses and lives that were destroyed by that general. Exactly. Sometimes it's quality over quantity.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Next, we drove by the Atlanta Zoo, also located in Grant Park.
The site was selected after all of the animals returned to this location following the burning of the area.
Kind of like when you move and your cat or dog just like finds its way back to your old house.
Yes, and after the years after the burning, soil in this area became rich and fertile. That's really where you get this greenness from, and of course that attracted the animals that still roamed. This area was mostly country at that time and attracted many animals, and so it was easy to just build walls around these animals and call it a zoo. Since that time, of course, they've acquired many animals not native to the region and made it more of a world-class zoo experience. One of the top zoos in Atlanta to go to. Top three zoos in Atlanta. Of course, it's also the home of the soon to not be, but home of the cyclorama. Yes.
What is the cyclorama, you ask? Well, he's gonna tell you.
Been described as a mural on the inside of a roll of toilet paper.
But why do they call it the cyclorama? Well, here's an answer for you.
Bicycles are not featured in the cyclorama at all. It's, it was drafted previous to the invention of the bicycle. So you won't see any reference to that. It's going to be moved to a new location, but it's one of three in existence in the United States. Again, I would say it's probably one of the top cycloramas in the city of Atlanta if you're looking to see one. No bicycles at that time. It would be many, many years after the invention, after the drafting of the cyclorama mural before bicycles would make its way to Atlanta.
So you can see Atlanta's a progressive city. We built the cyclorama and named it way before bicycles ever even came to Atlanta. That's forward thinking. We proceeded onto Boulevard, where my tour guide suddenly became misty-eyed and shared something very personal with me.
We've traveled over to the Boulevard side of Grand Park. It is a different part of the neighborhood as you cross over Boulevard. One notable experience, not historical, but a personal experience of mine, is one day I was strolling down this very boulevard and I saw a squirrel get hit by a car.
Really?
It was very traumatic.
Oh, wow.
Yes, quite true. One squirrel is a tragedy. Hundreds of squirrels is just a statistic. That squirrel was a tragedy to me.
As we proceeded down Boulevard, I noticed a curious sign for a veterinary clinic that said, "Animal fur first."
It has its roots in history. As I mentioned before, this was the first place the animals returned to after the burning, the first burning of Atlanta. And so obviously became a noted and favored spot for trappers and furriers at the time. Animals fur first may refer to the ancient slogan of those trappers and furriers at the time. Get the fur first, and then worry about the meat and organs later, but you got to start with the fur. Some say you eat an elephant one bite at a time. You've got to skin a deer from the outside in.
That's true.
Can't do it the other way. It won't work.
We crossed over the overpass, over Interstate 20, back towards the Oakland Cemetery.
Yeah. Originally, this area, now a highway, was a wall.
Oh, really?
Yes, it was a wall, much like the Berlin Wall, built to separate the city, one half from the other.
We proceeded underneath DeKalb Avenue and back into the old 4th Ward.
And now we're traveling up into old 4th Ward again. You know, much like Little Five Points was the commercial district of the Inman Park and Candler Park area, this area of old 4th Ward was part of the commercial district for the African-American community at the time. It was a hotspot of commercial activity through the 1960s here and Sweet Auburn, where African-Americans of all classes gathered together to engage in commerce. Because it was a neighborhood where, in the past, African-Americans used to do business, you can imagine now that there are none. It's been fully gentrified and changed, as most of those neighborhoods have been.
we hung a left on Edgewood and proceeded into downtown Atlanta, right by the Sweet Auburn Curb Market.
Yes, this is the Sweet Auburn Municipal Market. Inside, you'll find all varieties of sweet potatoes, collard greens, and onions.
Just those items,
but all varieties of those items. You'll find any piece of the pig or hog that you would care to have.
Okay. This tour is making me hungry. We continued further into downtown Atlanta by Georgia State University.
Atlanta, majestic downtown Atlanta, described by some as a smile missing teeth, but described by others as a majestic testament to the South arising up again. And now we've turned back again to Sweet Arbor. Now this was the most powerful commercial district in the city of Atlanta for African Americans in the past. And as such, now it's been completely shut down.
I noticed an old sign for a business that appeared to still be open. It was called Pal's Lounge, and I asked him if he knew the history of this establishment.
Every great civil rights leader in Atlanta has bumped and grinded in Pal's Lounge at some point in time. From Maynard to Martin. It's just down the street from the SNCC headquarters. So in the early to late 1960s, Powell's Lounge would be where folks would go down. Martin would go down with Rosa and do a little dance. Talk about strategy. So much has changed now.
We made our way past the historic Martin Luther King Center.
The King Center has... I would say on the order of tens of displays related to Martin Luther King Jr. The kind of in-depth study that you would expect perhaps from a child's book report. Many people do not take advantage of all that the King Center complex has to offer. In the homes, the old fashioned homes that are preserved from the days of King are inhabited by actors. It's like a colonial Williamsburg experience. So if you knock on the door, someone will come out and will be in the character of that person from the 1960s.
Okay, kind of old-timey black people.
Exactly.
They're actors.
And if you stay long enough, I think it's every 2 hours they do some of the display. Some of the activities that folks in that time in history, in that place in history, would engage in. So you can come and see a demonstration of flat ironing of some young lady's hair, as was traditionally done. Or you may see a young man get a conch, much like Malcolm did in his life. Other displays include how to make a poster for marching in a civil rights march.
We made our way back to the Little Five Points area and back to the Euclid Avenue Yacht Club. I certainly have learned a lot of new things about my city today that I didn't quite know about. Some things I don't quite believe. But anyway, it made me look at my city through different eyes. It made it look new and different again. And I have my tour guide for the secret history of Atlanta to thank for that.
Hi, this is Marnie Stern, and you're listening to WREK Atlanta.
Can be suave.
One, two, one, two, three, four.
It can be fast. It can be experimental. But it's always just jazz, and you can hear it every weekday from 9 to noon right here on WREK.
Welcome back to the North Avenue Lounge. I'm your host, Chris Gray. And I hope you enjoyed those two segments, Crump Dancing and the Secret History Tour of Atlanta with Lionel Dotson. Hope you can find that dude. Just go look for the smell of gin in the air in the Euclid Avenue Yacht Club. Whatever you do, do not use whatever he says as part of a history paper that you might be writing about Atlanta. Because I have a feeling you will get a D. You know, at best. Oh, but that was fun. But like I was saying, it's summertime, people. I hope you have plans for your summer. I hope if you're in school that, you know, maybe you're going to take a summer job, go see family, you know, get away from class for a while. If you're not in school, if you're, you know, an adult, you know, maybe you have kids and you're going to take them to do something for the summer, maybe summer camp, or maybe a pool or a water park. Do they still have water parks? I couldn't remember. Are there water parks in Atlanta? I bet there are up in the suburbs. I live in the city. I can't think of any water parks in the city, but I bet they're out in the suburbs. When I was growing up, we used to have a place down in Orlando called Wet n Wild. That was a pretty big water park. It's one of those water parks where, you know, after I became an adult, I realized that we're just all swimming in each other's pee. I mean, there's like, you know, there's all the water slides and the big pools and everything, and you know, there's concession stands, a lot of soda and lemonade being sold, but no one's going to the bathrooms. And the water level in the pool is just, you know, rising slightly as the day goes on. Gross! But don't let that stop you. Don't let that stop you at all, because I'm sure they chlorinate that water to kill whatever is in our pee. Because that's what summertime is all about. It's swimming in your fellow neighbor's urine. Oh, that's terrible. And I should really cut that out if I had a time delay. But I don't. I don't. But maybe you could go to a local pool. Oh, I hear Decatur is getting this like awesome like 5-block-long water slide down the middle of downtown Decatur. I don't know what that's all about, but I'll be there, and there's really no pool at the end of it, so I assume I'm not gonna splash into all the pee from the city of Decatur. The water's gotta be treated. Did you ever have one of those slip and slides when you were growing up? You know, the poor man's water park? Parents just get that big plastic sheet and turn on the lawn sprinklers and let you go running down and sliding on it in your front lawn. But of course, you know, no one's lawn is smooth. Like, there's rocks and everything underneath it, so it's never just like a smooth shoot. You're going over bumpy gravel. Maybe one of your little brother's toys are out in the yard. You go over that. Did he still make that? He should have outlawed that along with lawn darts as far as, you know, kids getting injured in the summertime. Was that slip and slide? Because you get a good run, you know, and it's wet and it's just basically a giant plastic sheet. You get a good head of speed going and you jump down on it and you slide and you're still accelerating, but at the end of it, it's just your grass. you know, or maybe a bush. Or if you're, you know, not really into prior planning like me and my brothers were, maybe just your concrete driveway, you know? Maybe just the, you know, the searing heat of concrete after it's been roasting in the Florida sun all day. And here you come bare-chested, sliding across a sheet of plastic, you know, with no sense of safety whatsoever. And oh, the plastic in the water, it's cool on my chest. And then, then it's like all of a sudden you just got raked over red hot sandpaper. And you know what? Then the fun was over. That was probably the end of your summer for a little while. At least the end of you taking your shirt off for the rest of the summer. Because, ew, that can get nasty. You're all skinned up on your nipples. Oh, but it's Florida. Isn't Florida the one place you wouldn't be surprised to see some dude with his shirt off and he's all skinned up on his chest? You wouldn't think twice about that if you were down in Florida. You're like, yeah, I guess that's what they do down here. That's the state of Florida. For people who are at the end of their life or at the end of their rope. Florida. That should be that should be on the license plate. We always went to like one of those summer day camps. You know, not like a real summer camp where they, you know, your parents send you away for a couple of weeks and you get to stay in cabins and, you know, have that real Friday the 13th Crystal Lake experience. Now, that was for kids with money. No, our summer camp was basically just our elementary or middle school, and they opened up for the summer and had, you know, like older kids, which I assume were like high school kids, and they'd have activities and arts and crafts and stuff like that. But you're in your classrooms that you were in all year. You just went back to school. Only difference was there was no bus service. No bus came to pick you up for the day summer camp. Your parents had to drive you to your middle school and drop you off. You went into your homeroom class, and instead of having homework, you were gonna make something with glue and popsicle sticks. That's how poor kids do it, people. That's how that's how we do summer camp. You know, and then at the end of the day, your parents have to come pick you up, or you gotta get a ride from someone else's parents, or, you know, maybe you rode your bike. The yellow bus wasn't coming, it wasn't queuing up for you. You know, my parents weren't coming to pick us up, they were at work. You know, they sent us to this to get us out of the house so we wouldn't destroy it, you know, while you're off at work. What do they say, idle hands are the devil's work? Yeah. Kids who are out of school and you just leave them at home, unsupervised? Who knows what could have happened? That's why I think video games became so popular. You know, when I was coming up, it was, you know, the Atari 2600. We had that, then you got your Commodore 64, and then your Apple, and then your Macintosh. You know, then eventually, oh no, we had Sega. Remember that? Sega Genesis? The original Nintendo? You know, you gotta give kids something to occupy them so they don't go out and commit crimes because they're bored. Because when you're a kid, you really don't have a sense of consequences. You know, you're like, oh, if I smash this car window with a brick, you know, what's the worst that's gonna happen? They're gonna send me to juvenile detention? At least that's something. I'm bored. Sitting in the house all day. And during the week, there are no cartoons on TV. When I was coming up, the cartoons were only on Saturdays, people. Saturday morning. So if you stayed home, you know, from school, or if it was summertime, you know, maybe there was something on in the morning. Maybe you could watch Sesame Street. You know, if you were a little older, hey, sucks for you. And then there was nothing. You know, just soap operas and infomercials and all of that stuff until around, oh, 3 o'clock. You know, usually when kids normally are getting off school. And that's when all, you know, on Fox and things like that, they'd play DuckTales. You know, Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, G.I. Joe, the Transformers. That's when all, you know, the cartoons came on. So you had something to watch. But no kid in middle school is going to just sit there and watch General Hospital. Days of Our Lives. I mean, you'll do it out of desperation because you're looking for something to do. Or, you know, if you're like me and my brothers and the kids in our neighborhood, you get bored enough, you wind up going out and committing, you know, petty larceny. Oh, let's see how much property damage we can make and then run away and get away with it before the cartoons come on at 3 o'clock and our parents get home. Nah, they weren't coming home till about 6:30. So, you know, you had a couple hours to get in some good, you know, cartoon watching. By the time they come in the door, you know, Seinfeld and Coach and those shows were coming on. And then it was dinner time. And as long as, you know, the police weren't bringing you home in cuffs, they were never the wiser. You know? And then you get up the next day, do it all again for the next 3 months, from June, July, until August, when school starts again. When your parents take you out to get your new school clothes, your new notebooks and pencils and, you know, backpacks. Because for some reason, all the stuff you had 3 months ago is no longer good enough. I need new stuff. I need new pencils. I need new pens. I need new notebook paper. I don't want last year's notebook paper. That's 87 notebook paper. I want 88 notebook paper. Do kids still do that? No, they don't. Everything's on the computer. They don't write. The kids, you don't still have that pencil sharpener that's bolted to the wall that you gotta go up and sharpen your pencils anymore, right? Kids have laptops and iPads. They don't have to learn handwriting like we used to. You know, all you gotta do is know how to type. And actually, you don't even have to know to type on a keyboard. You have to do it on a flat screen. That's a whole nother skill. We had to learn how to type on a typewriter. You know, remember you turned it on and it sounded like you were turning on a nuclear reactor? Like, boom. And you hit a key and it's like, it was serious. But now I don't have to do that anymore. What am I talking about? This radio show has gone off the rails, people. What I teach you new things. You know, we learned about crump dancing. We talked about, you know, the history of Atlanta from some drunk guy who clearly didn't know what he was talking about. And I question his pseudo-British accent. That was an interesting dude, though. I could have gotten murdered, but I didn't. I didn't. It was all in the spirit of adventure. So why don't you go out and find your spirit of adventure this summer? All right, go do something exciting. Go take a dip in the ocean, in the pool. If you go out in the ocean, look out for the sharks. Go to Disney World if you have kids. Don't be that adult that likes to go to Disney World just because they like Disney World and you're like 35. You know, that's weird, you know? You see all your pictures on Facebook of you at Disney and you're sans kid? You know, like, why didn't you go to, you know, the Bahamas or something? Stay in an all-inclusive resort. Why are you messing around with Mickey and Goofy? You're 35. You know you're going back to work at the cubicle? Is that your fantasy? Is that your new? That's not new. We've been growing up with those characters since what? When did Walt Disney come up with Mickey Mouse? Back in the 40s? Do something new. All right, my name's Chris Gray. This has been the North Avenue Lounge. Y'all have a good one. I'll talk to you next month. Peace.